Welcome to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law podcast for October 2009. I'm your host, Don Cameron of Cameron McKendrick LLP in Toronto, Canada. We hope you'll find this podcast informative, but it should not be taken as legal advice. The opinions expressed are solely those of the participants. On August 31, 2009, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit issued their decision in In re Bose and addressed the issue of fraud on the Trademarks Office in the context of declarations of use. My guests for this podcast are Kim Saluga, a trademarks lawyer at Sunstein, Kahn, Murphy, and Timbers LLP in Boston, Massachusetts, and Jonathan Hudis, a partner at Oblon Spivak, McClellan, Mayer, and Neustadt LLP in Arlington, Virginia. Under the trademark law of most countries, it is not enough to simply register a trademark, you also have to use it. As part of the registration process, the United States trademark law requires trademark owners to file a declaration between the 5th and 6 years after the registration date. In the declaration, the registrant is supposed to set out the wares or services in association with which the trademark is in use. Bose is a manufacturer of speakers and other audio devices. At one time, Bose made and sold audio tape recorders and players in association with the trademark Wave, and Bose had registered the trademark Wave in association with those wares, among others. Sometime between 1996 and 1997, Bose stopped manufacturing and selling audio tape recorders and players in association with the Wave trademark. However, Bose continued to repair previously sold audio tape recorders and players and ship them back to their customers. In January 2001, the General Counsel for Bose, Mark Sullivan, signed and filed a combined Section 8 affidavit of continuous use and Section 9 renewal application for the trademark Wave. In it, he stated that Bose continued to use the trademark Wave in association with audio tape recorders and players. Mr. Sullivan's Section 8 and Section 9 affidavit came into question during an opposition brought by Bose against Hexawave with respect to their Hexawave trademark application. Hexawave alleged that Bose had committed fraud in its registration renewal application when it claimed that it had used the trademark Wave on all goods in the registration while knowing that it stopped manufacturing and selling audio tape recorders and players. The Trademark Trial and Appeal Board of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office ruled that the repairing and shipping back of audio tape recorders and players did not constitute use in commerce so as to maintain a trademark registration for those goods. In addition, the TTAB found that Mr. Sullivan's belief that transporting the repaired goods constituted use was not reasonable. It found that the false statement made in Mr. Sullivan's affidavit was material to the Section 8 and 9 renewal. And as a result, the board concluded that Bose had committed fraud on the USPTO in maintaining the Wave trademark registration, and it ordered the cancellation of the Bose Wave trademark registration in its entirety. Prior to the Bose decision, the TTAB standard for fraud had been that set out in the Medinol case in 2003. In Medinol, the TTAB canceled the trademark registration on the basis that the registrant had committed fraud in obtaining the registration. The applicant knew or should have known that the trademark was not being used. The board held that it was the trademark owner's objective manifestations of intent that determined whether fraud occurred. The fact that the registrant's misstatement was unintentional did not matter. Kim Saluga explains.
Under Medinol, fraud was found where the applicant or the registrant made a material representation of fact which it knew or should have known to be false or misleading, and where the applicant or the registrant's belief in the truth of that statement was not reasonable. So under Medinol, proof of specific intent was actually not required.
After Medinol, an accidental misstatement as to use could be fatal to a trademark registration. In some cases, foreign registrants with limited proficiency in English claim not to have understood the use requirements. Nevertheless, fraud was found. The Medinol rule was somewhat limited by subsequent jurisprudence in that if there was a false statement made with respect to a class of wares, then only that class of wares would be struck out. When then does fraud occur? The U.S. trademark statute provides that a party may petition to cancel a registered trademark on the ground that the registration was obtained fraudulently. Fraud occurs when an applicant knowingly makes false, inaccurate, or misleading material representations of fact in connection with the application. The false representation may be caused by a misunderstanding, an inadvertence, or a mere negligent omission. But in order for there to be fraud, there must be an intent to mislead. It must be proved with clear and convincing evidence. Direct evidence of deceptive intent is rarely available. But how do you prove intent? How do you get into the head of the person who makes a false statement to determine why that statement was made? The answer is to look to the statement and the surrounding circumstances, and from those circumstances, infer what was the intent. Look to the indirect and circumstantial evidence. But any such evidence must still be clear and convincing in order to be able to draw an inference of deceptive intent. In the Bose case, Chief Judge Michelle of the CAFC said that a should-have-known test was not a proper test for fraud, but rather was a simple negligence standard. Chief Judge Michelle quoted several earlier cases which held that mere negligence is not sufficient to infer fraud or dishonesty. Even gross negligence does not, of itself, justify an inference of intent to deceive. There was no issue that Bose had made a material misrepresentation to the PTO. In looking at the evidence in the Bose case, the CAFC noted that Mr. Sullivan knew that Bose had stopped manufacturing and selling audio tape recorders and players at the time that the Section 8 and 9 renewal was filed. They considered the statement in the renewal application that the Wavemark was in use in commerce on all the goods, including audio tape recorders and players, was false. However, Mr. Sullivan believed that the trademark was in use by the repair and returning of audio tape recorders and players. Although the TTAB found this belief to be not reasonable, the CAFC pointed out that the reasonableness of Mr. Sullivan's belief was not part of the analysis. Because Hexawave could not point to evidence to support an inference of deceptive intent, it failed to satisfy the clear and convincing evidence standard required to establish fraud. The CAFC set aside the cancellation of the Wave registration and remanded the matter to the TTAB to restrict the registration to reflect the commercial reality that the mark was no longer in use on audio tape recorders and players. So the new Bose standard requires proof of an intent to deceive.
The new standard is that now fraud may be found only when the trademark owner knowingly makes a false material representation with the intent to deceive the PTO. So now specific intent is required.
Jonathan Hudis believes that existing jurisprudence gives us insight into what sorts of circumstances the TTAB and the courts will be looking for to infer an intention to deceive.
You can look at a few older cases that I would direct your listeners to read, and one of them is the board's opinion in January of 2006 in Standard Knitting versus Toyota Jidosha Kabushiki Kaisha, and the district court's opinion in Specialized Seating versus Greenwich Industries. Now, both of those decisions were after full recitation of facts and full chances for discovery were had, and there was, in fact, full airing of the evidence. One was in court and one was before the board. Now, even though those cases were decided under the prior knew or should have known standard, you can look to those opinions where you can point to representations made by the trademark applicant at the time where there was evidence before them of facts to the contrary, such as we use it, it being the mark, we use it in connection with 10 goods, and there is only clear evidence of prior usage of the mark in connection with only 5 goods. And maybe there are records within the company that year over year over year show what, in fact, the mark is going to be used on, and maybe there is consideration that some of the goods were never intended to be used on the mark, that there was a discontinuance of use of the goods in connection with the mark. And in the Greenwich case, which had to do with evidence that the trade dress of a seating chair at issue was functional, the examining attorney at the trademark office had asked for very significant evidence of whether or not the chair was developed, the design of the chair was developed for a functional purpose, thus under U.S. law rendering it incapable of registration and protection as being utilitarian functional. And there was a plethora of evidence that was hidden from the examining attorney, and that ended up coming out during the course of the legal action.
The Bose case left open the question as to whether a reckless disregard for the truth or falsity of the statement made to the trademarks office would support a finding of fraud, and if it did, what conduct would qualify as being reckless. In her case comment, Kim Saluga discusses the circumstances where willful blindness or indifference to the facts may permit the TTAB to infer an intention to deceive.
There could be circumstances where, in terms of willful blindness, an applicant or a registrant may intentionally not look into the status of their trademark use so that it has no specific knowledge about its use. You know, a strict reading of Bose could encourage this type of behavior potentially, but it's extremely doubtful that the Federal Circuit had that in mind. And another situation could be indifference to the facts, where an applicant or a registrant signs a declaration without making any inquiry whatsoever into the status of its trademark use. So it's not intentional in this case, but they just don't bother to look into their trademark use. And so the requirement of specific intent shouldn't reward those who neglect to perform any due diligence into their trademark use. And, you know, each case will turn on its specific facts, and the line between gross negligence and recklessness will be difficult. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the board found fraud or at least seriously considered a fraud allegation in factual situations like these, especially where there isn't an open question of law or where the declarant was in a position in which he or she not only should have known about the use or lack thereof, but must have known given the facts surrounding the trademark use.
So what should trademark owners do in order to avoid allegations of findings of fraud with respect to declarations of use?
I would be very careful when the trademark lawyer is advising the client upon signing a declaration of use, and that can come at various stages. If it is a use-based application, if it's an intent-to-use application, but later an amendment to allege use is filed, a statement of use is filed before registration, at the time of maintenance between the fifth and sixth year, where proof of continuing use is required, and at every 10-year renewal. Every single time you are asking an individual or corporate officer to sign that the mark is being used in connection with a list of goods or services, have documentary proof behind you showing that, in fact, the mark is being used on that list. And even though the trademark office only requires evidence of use on one of the goods or one item of services in the class, it may behoove the trademark applicant or registrant renewing or maintaining the registration to have in their files documentary proof of use of the mark on the listing of goods and services in their entirety.
After Bose, trademark owners can definitely breathe more easily, but accuracy is still very important when signing PTO declarations. And the fact that the risk is now lower doesn't signal to me that owners should behave significantly differently. And I think this is especially true because the facts of Bose were unique. There was an open question as to whether or not this repair of goods versus actually manufacturing and selling the goods was use in commerce under the Trademark Act. And because the Bose case expressly left open whether or not recklessness will count as fraud in the future and what that standard will be. So we don't know quite yet how the board will be following the Bose decision. So it makes sense to still proceed with caution and make sure you do your due diligence. And I think that trademark owners would be well advised to seek experienced trademark counsel to assist them, because this is pretty much unresolved terrain at this time.
How significant is the Bose decision to trademark owners and practitioners?
I think it's very significant. I think the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals has looked at the reality of trademark prosecution practice, the reality of busy business people, and mistakes can be made. Sometimes honest mistakes can be made during trademark prosecution. Not every mistake should be rendering a trademark application, registration, or portion of application or registration, if they're multi-class, invalidated based upon some trademark office objective standard of fraud when there was no intent to deceive the office.
My guests for this podcast have been Kim Saluga, a trademarks lawyer at Sunstein, Kahn, Murphy & Timbers, LLP, and Jonathan Hudis, a partner at Oblon Spivak, McClellan, Mayer, and Neustadt, LLP. For further information about Kim Saluga, Jonathan Hudis, and the Bose decision, and for information on other jurisdiction podcasts, please visit iplawpodcast.com. You have been listening to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast. I'm Don Cameron of Cameron McKendrick, LLP in Toronto, Canada. Thank you for listening.